Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Weekly Awakening podcast episode. Listen, this is 100 episodes. Can you believe it? I cannot believe that I have done 100 episodes of the Weekly Awakening podcast, formerly the Hair Healer podcast. It is unbelievable that I got here. I'm going to do an episode later, probably my Weekly Awakening episode later this week. I'll talk a little bit about what I did to get there. But I said, you know what? Let me bring on a special guest to this show. And for those of you who are just tuning in, my original podcast, the Hair Healer podcast, was started and recorded at the salon I work at, Capriotti Salon, in person in the fall of 2019. Holy shit, that seems like, you know, decades ago. And I thought, let me bring back, you know, originally the format was me and my clients. We'd sit at the color table. We, you know, the first 20 episodes, we talk about their life, kind of like we would do in my chair. And I said, let me bring someone back. And I said, why don't I bring back my good friend, client, everything, David Wurzel from episode one. I was like, and that's just see where we're at, where life is, what's happening. So yeah, I'm excited. Let's get started and cracking. How are you, David?
I'm doing great. And that's 100's a huge number. I'm thinking of, like, on your journey, like, as you talk to those people, like, I got to start with, like, I'm gonna turn the tables here. Like, what did you learn about yourself? What did you learn from someone that you pick up, you find, and how did it affect you? You know, in those 100 conversations you had. I'm just super curious.
That's curious. Like, I mean, I love that you asked that. Well, one thing I found out about myself is how determined I am, right? Because I had quit everything pretty much my entire life, everything I'd ever tried really, except for beauty school and doing hair and talking. And this has been a wild ride, right? When you start out this journey, you know, I thought, oh, right away, my podcast is going to like blow up and everyone's going to like share it and be obsessed with it. And that's not what happened, you know? And then COVID happened and I just kept going. Even to this 100th episode, I'm nowhere near I thought where I would be 100 episodes ago. But this determination in me keeps not stopping. And every time I have these moments, it's like something can pick me up. And I think I learned, because what I try to get from the show is the truth of people, to be able to express themselves in their truest, authentic way and to show the world, you know, we all have our quirks or our upsets, everything, you know, and we can all join in together and sharing in that authentic energy. And so I think what I got from it, not only did every episode teach me something about myself, you know, I also got this sense of togetherness for everyone and how every single person has had a trauma, a pain, a heartbreak, a happiness, feeling crazy, fucked up, all kinds of issues. Like, we are all together in that. And I think 100 episodes later, I've really gotten to see that, especially interviewing people through COVID.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Like, and I think that's really important. I think that's a bigger thing, realizing that for me right now, everyone is so stressed out.
So stressed.
So even the trauma, it's not like, oh, that just happened. It's rearview mirror. It's just like, we're so 15 minutes. Like, I, you know, unfortunately, I had friends who had family members die. And, and like, you just forget about it. Like, oh, didn't that happen like a couple months ago? You're good, right? That was a couple months ago. So I think we're just so not in processing. And I think that stuff, I think one of the things that happened in COVID too is like for a lot of people slowed down. And even those passings that came snuck up on because you didn't have that crazy, you had another kind of crazy. But when things slowed down and we had to kind of all really take a knee for a little bit, like we were just left with like where we were sitting, you know,
where we were sitting,
our relationships around us, good or bad. We were kind of talking that before we popped on the air where, you know, some people looked at the person or significant other and said, oh, wow, it's a great enterprise. It's a business between us, but I don't know if there's any love there or their kids or their life. So, and then when it picked back up and just started, it wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to throw that stuff out. I think that stuff stuck with folks as we're going forward. So I think it's just been an interesting time for a lot of people. I'm realizing there's a lot of stress that people are under all around us.
Yeah. And they had no distractions to take away, especially the first year of COVID, right? There was no gym, friends, the normal social stuff that normally you'd be able to get out of yourself and forget about your problems or just like be able to ignore something. All of it was left with you.
Right. And that's a tough one. I think what's really good, what we're really good at is not paying attention to ourselves. And, you know,
so true.
So you had Netflix, TikTok, Apple TV, Instagram, blah, blah, blah. So I can literally spend a night not paying attention to me and watching other people live their lives or how they want to tell me they're living their lives and be completely distracted. And that's where I'm really trying to find my balance of that's cool, man. People are like, I hate TikTok. Or I'm like, man, I love that stuff. That stuff is great, but you got to minimize and find your space for it. It's like anything, it becomes too, it can quickly become too much and overflow into things I need to do to move myself forward,
Move yourself forward. Now, David, let me ask you this. So when we recorded, it was, I'll never forget, it was my first episode. He came in. It was Friday the 13th, September 2019. Go listen to that episode. I think I was so nervous, but of course we ended up talking. I feel like the episode was like an hour and a half. It's still my longest episode. And it's such a good, like, raw, organic episode. And during that time, you know, we had no idea what was about to unfold a mere 5 months later and change
Crazy.
And separate. And so where do you think you are today versus back in 2019 and where you are emotionally? Are you still in the wave of learning yourself?
Yeah, but it's in a wave of dealing because I'm really in the process of dealing with myself. And I think, again, something we talked about before we popped on is not about self-improvement, but about self-love. I feel like, how can I be better? Everybody's talking about the things they did to make themselves better. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know that that's healthy, but one of the things I'm added in is a little qigong. So it's like a little moving meditation. And when
And
you
we
read
did a
the, I
little bit
haven't.
of that outside the salon the other week when you came in for a haircut. He showed me a few qigong moves. Some moving. Oh, what's that? The healing promise
Of chi.
of qi.
So, yeah,
QI,
so
people
the
that
whole.
don't know, it's not CHI.
Yeah, it's Q. It's a Q. QI. Q.
QI.
Four Qs. Four Qs.
Yeah.
So the idea that you in Qigong is like everything's already around you and in you to heal yourself, right? And so it was interesting. I was watching shows where people start unlocking parts of their creative parts of their brain and where that goes. So it's like I feel like there's the things I have unlocked are in here. So the thing, the difference in from 2019 to now was really not getting into self-improvement, but self-love and unlocking the parts of myself and loving the parts of myself. Oh man, there you are, little Davey Wurtz. I love you.
Little baby words.
And I think we're really good at, for me, I'm really good at moving past that and trying to be this other person. But my story isn't about being tough and resilient. It's like a love story. It's about finding a way to love myself. And that's a bigger thing I've learned in the last couple of years. It's that thing. It's not like being the toughest guy, but being the most loving. And that's really like the ultimate power.
The ultimate, and to tie into your chart a little bit, because over COVID, I've done a little chart work, astrology work with David. Again, he's been so much of my first. He's like, okay, I'll be one of your clients. Let me do this. And so, for those of you that know astrology, in the first house is his rising sign is Leo. So he got Jupiter and Mars. So there's this sense of like, if you know him walking around town, he's like, hey, what's up? Talks to everyone. Got this like, what's muscles? He's what's a firefighter tattoos. But he's got his sun, Venus, and Mercury in Libra. So there's this other sense on the inside of like sensitive feelings, love, happiness, joy, all the Venus things. So at first you present this like, hey, what's up? I'm trying, and you kind of feel that way, and then you get caught into your mind, and you're like, oh wait, no, I'm love. And I always find you, again, I've known you for a few years now, you're good at that balance, whether you realize it or not. You're good at like presenting yourself. You come in, be like, hey everyone, so blah blah blah, and then you sit down and you just be talking about some like raw emotional like thing. And I'm like, oh shit, all right. Tough guys do have feelings. No.
Yeah, they do. But unfortunately, the feeling for me a lot of times can be the angry guy, and I think there's a confliction. And so I guess one of the bigger things is, why are you so angry, bro?
Very
Yeah,
Mars
bro,
in the
why are you
first
so
house
mad?
too.
I watch like myself, and really where I'm envious is some people who can really practice non-attachment. I'm like, man, that's where I need to be. Who cares about the person in front of me who's on their phone? Who cares about the person who didn't put their turn signal on,
Now, let me
who
ask you
cares?
something. In those moments of anger, when you're, and I know for myself, I have them too, when you spit out and you're just like, fuck the world, and you're mad and everything, if you can look a little bit deeper, is there usually something, is it the morning, something set you off the night before? Is there usually something deeper in there, something in our friendships, our relationships, our self-worth, our love, that also, is more, when you're in that state, you're more prone to your anger?
Yeah, I really do believe that the source of my anger is myself,
Yeah.
because I'm so upset with something that I'm not doing here, and that goes back to the self-improvement versus self-love, that I project it out. And so it's called righteous indignation, where your brain becomes like that person who's taking too long, that person doing this, like you're justified in your anger to them, meaning like they're doing something wrong. And what happens is, you can focus whatever's going on you on that person.
Oh, yeah.
So I realize my anger has nothing to do with them, but everything to do with myself. And I just quickly project it outward. Now, that's what I think, you know. And again, I'm not making it more like woe is me, but it's more of the settling down, the calming, the centering, and understanding your brain's always trying to write an equation. Your brain has not does not care about Your brain doesn't give a shit about if you're happy or not. It wants you safe. And so if we can't solve it, it'll be like, yo, there's your problem right there. And I think we see it all over now, right? I think everyone's unhappy. So either you're blaming Trump, or now you're blaming Biden, or now you're blaming COVID, or
Your
now you're blaming
neighbor.
these people, the neighbor, the people who are wearing a mask, or the people who aren't wearing a mask, the people who, you know what I mean? It's we just project. I think everybody's guilty of that to a certain extent. And it's kind of like, okay, I got to pull. That's my push. And it's just like a little push. I got to find something to pull against that and bring me back.
I know that speaking of driving, because you used, driving as an anger thing. If I and I've had some crazy moments, if I can, if I catch myself in the morning and I'm like, beep, flipping off this asshole, no patience driving around. That's like my first tick that I'm not in the right spot and I need to restart the day. Because when I'm in a nor, if I can reflect, when I'm in a happy, normal spot, I don't give a shit about who's in front of me,
Right.
who's going slow, what's happening. I'm just enjoying life. So when I start, so those listening, if you start that day or you catch yourself just having road rage and angry, there's something deeper, and check that. I forgot I had to put the heat on this
Yeah.
morning and my thing came on. So for those listening, if you can hear my fan in the back,
No,
apologies.
I can't hear anything.
Oh, good.
You have noise canceling headphones or noise canceling microphones or something like that,
Oh,
so
good. I
you're
hope
good to
that
go.
cancels.
Your shit's high tech, sis. Your shit is
That
high
is
motherfucking
something
tech.
happened. I mean, I rode the wave and
Yeah.
just kept going and going, and I got this fancy machine a year ago too. I got that. So what? Hold on, sorry, I lost my little thing. Now I lost my train of thought. So where are you at currently today, the last week with how you feel, with what's going on in that brain? Because again, David, why I love having him on the show, why we're friends, is he's someone who's deeply reflective of himself. Same with me. And it can be hard to find people that are
Yeah.
on that level. Most people don't even want to look at themselves, let alone they're like, why are you looking at yourself like that?
Right. Well, I think it's a dirty business, right? When you look
Yeah.
inside, it's like if you understand your brain's drawn to the fishing, when you look inside, you're not gonna be like, oh, look at all these wonderful things. You're like, oh, this room is so dirty. This is gross. You know what you walk by and see. And so, but so where I'm at is a couple of things. One is finding the good first. Always like, so I'm gonna go. The first thing is being in the moment. That's the biggest thing. Like if I had a clock, it would be not 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3. It would be like now, 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 now,
Love
right
that.
now. Don't forget about the past, forget about the future, right now, right? Because then there's nothing to worry about. I'm just right here. Like wherever I failed before, wherever it's possible, I don't care. I'm good right here.
Is that what do you kind of
So.
yell that to yourself to bring you back into the moment? Sort of like, look, David, you're here. You're right now in this moment.
Yeah, so I've tried all kinds of things. I think it's a breath. Because one of the things I love in like Buddhism, it's like I'm going to paraphrase, like basically you breathe in gratitude and you breathe out compassion. So I like that idea, and that's so programatizing that. How do I become in the moment, become compassionate with myself? What am I grateful for? Take that breath in. So you have to get a process. The thing is finding a simple process that brings me into the moment, that makes me intentionalize the relationships with myself, with you, with something bigger than myself. And that's where I'm at. And it seems to be working. When I really focus on that, and so the other stuff starts to drift off a little bit more, and I can get a little bit more into, not being so encumbered by unwanted external narratives or unwanted internal narratives or the events around me.
How, for people listening, and what is a good way to start to to gain that have like, oh God, I don't even know how to begin to look at myself. What do I even look at? Like, what do you say it as a practice? What do you say to the people that you teach, you know, of mindfulness? What do you say is like a practice, a good practice to start getting in the habit of reflecting on your own bullshit?
Well, I think it starts being intentional. You can't, like, it's like somebody says to me, I'm not good at running. I'm like, oh, like when did you run? Oh, I ran once or twice. I'm like, oh, well, like nobody becomes good doing something once or twice. You know, you have to have a process. So what I would do is, look, first thing you do is you need to be intentional and take stock in what's going on. Pull out a pad and like literally write down like 10 things, 5 things that you love, 3 things, you know, not one, 3, give me a couple that you really love about yourself. And then what I would invite you to do is ask somebody, people you care about, to do the same. And you'd be surprised when people come back like, oh, okay, snaps. I didn't think about that. How other people see you is going to be very interesting. And so it's interesting is how you see yourself and how you reflect outward. So I would start up any kind of process that way with the positive. What's going on in the positive? I think that would be a really great place to start.
Yeah, don't dive right into the negative or else you'll be like, all right, I'm going to keep diving off this bridge.
You know, right. We always like, okay, what are the 4 things we want to fix about ourselves? Mm. I got to start doing this. I got to start doing that. Like, stop. Like, tell me where you're at now, you know, and double down on those things. Build off of your strengths and build off of your foundation.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's a lot of times that foundation is deeper and bigger than you think.
I want to talk a little bit about detachment, right? That's something I practice. That's something I think we can all find very valued. And first of all, for our listeners, how would you describe detachment?
Well, it's not the opposite of love, right? Oh, sorry. Pause. It is the opposite of love.
Okay. Right?
Yeah, like hate is not the opposite of love. Detachment is it's not caring. That's a hard thing, that not giving a shit. The subtle art, there's a great book, it's called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And the guy wrote, it's not about not giving a fuck, it's because you give a fuck so much, you only got so many fucks to give. And the whole thing is he's getting to use the word fuck a billion times makes people like, maybe that's great.
Play his tension, people love the F word.
Yeah, so, but he really has a valid point. It's that you only have so many fucks to give, and put them in your pocket, and don't give it to somebody who's paying in nickels or taking a long time or wherever it is. Put it back and give it to people where it matters. Don't expel it from a negative perspective. Put those into positive things. So for me, it's not easy, right? I'm going to be clear on this one. Like there's a great quote before, you know, it's like, before the truth sets you free, it tends to make you miserable, you know? And I'm like, true. So count backwards, like, okay, don't be about myself, be about whatever else is going on around me. And maybe helping someone. If something's going on, you're annoyed, like offering maybe a word. Like I also find like some, if people are jerks to me, sometimes I'll apologize first just to put it down.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh, right. Well, I'm sorry too. More often than not, like you apologize first, I feel the other person comes back and gives an apology. Oh, we're cool. And then you just move on. But when you go like this to somebody, so the example is I pulled in. I was coming into Narberth. The guy in front of me stopped and was going to back on the spot. So I stopped. Then he went forward. So he's doing something. I looked down for a second. I looked down. He's gone. Person behind me lays on their horn. So I was like, and I just waved. I looked, sorry. I'm really sorry about that. You know, and then the other person was like, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Simple stuff like that. Versus like, oh, I gave that person the finger, which is kind of the Philly, like, you know, the bird.
The bird.
It would have gone the other way. But anyways, just stuff like that. Maybe there's, you know, just letting go and sometimes offering the apology first could be that.
I think that's huge. And I think for me, a way that I practice detachment and detaching from outcomes and things like that and people is because I think that's where we all have our biggest attachment issues is to people and people controlling our emotional welfare is that I am literally not in control of anyone but myself. And so sometimes when I feel like all over the place, I can't control this, I can't control what that person's doing, what they think, blah, blah, blah. It's like, Colleen, chill the fuck out. You have no control over what this person's going to do or say, and you're just going to drive yourself crazy. All you have is control of how you respond to that. And that can be so hard even in those moments of, but again, I think where everyone needs or should or probably feels like they need detachment the most is when it comes to people, you know? And I think that plays in our inner child, because when we come to our emotional states, our really high emotional states, which usually involve love in some way, whether love with friendship, love with love, whatever it is, that inner child is almost like has the keys right away. And so that's where all of our attachment shit comes from, is childhood. And it's kind of like, oh, no, I got to control you in this outcome because so you don't hurt me in some way. You don't make me feel those emotions in some way. So I feel too, besides that's a deep practice, it's a lot about like getting in and healing and loving your inner child, which is what we talked about loving little Dave many times, but before we hopped on here, you brought it up about your self-love right now.
Right. So, I think you hit it. Like, you control no one yourself. That whole thing is like a thing. Like this whole, it's part of a bigger process. The non-attachment is a great one to just pause and detach. I think, you know, you want something that's going to bring you in the moment and detach. But detach, kind of try and do it in a positive way, or understanding like, yeah, it comes from my need for control, or because I was hurt as a child. You know, it very rarely has something to do with the situation. There's like the, you know, sometimes I'm stressed about something earlier and something happens. It just gives me a spot where I kind of load that. And also for me, like I had a past relationship with a friend of mine that just kind of went south because this person never wanted to take responsibility for themselves, right?
Yeah.
And so I'd always put myself in there, and then they always came back when something would happen. It would come back, but I love you. I'm like, ultimately, I would come in, but if you love me, you wouldn't be doing the shit you're doing.
Yeah. And people use that as an excuse. Well, I love you, so I should be able to get away with all of my behaviors.
Right. And the problem is yours, because I love you. You don't need to be reacting like you are. I'm sorry, can we just move on? Because I love you. So ultimately, I think part of the non-attachment is kind of really ultimately getting rid of like, so this person has become somebody I need to like, yeah, I just can't deal with them anymore. Yeah. I just need to like, hey, how you doing? And just keep going. Like, I just don't need to be attached to that.
Boundaries.
So, yeah, but, and the boundaries and like being real with yourself of like, it's not about you getting involved and sitting down and dealing with it. Sometimes it's supposed to be like, I need to just kind of navigate around that thing entirely.
And to navigate around. Now, are you teaching these lessons to your kids?
I try not to be their little brains are developing. You know, they're kind of like 14 and 16. So I like to, like, I really want to, when they come to me, I don't want to be the guy, you know, but like, really the thing I think is important is just pausing. I think that's the most, like, so we have a process in our program we use. It's about a moment of mindfulness, setting your intention and then moving to action. Mindfulness, intention, action. If I'm dealing with a younger child or somebody's younger, just pause. Just don't respond for a second, right? And let that space just, because sometimes I look at some of the things I've done as a kid or adult, it's really like in the moment where I jump in, what is the most hateful thing I can say because I am angry and I can find that. And then I'm like, oh, I can't believe I said that to another person.
That's your Mars in the first house in Leo.
Yes, Mars in her. Yeah, man. I was going for the throat. Good, right? So my one friend once said to me, you know what you're really good at? I was like, oh, what's that? He's like, making people feel bad. I was like, oh my God.
How old were you when someone said that?
I was in my 20s, because he's like, what he's saying was like, if we ever wanted to get in a fight with somebody, we'd wheel you to the front because you would just disintegrate somebody. And I was like, oh my God, like that's a strength of mine. Mm. And that was really, but he was trying to mean it in a positive way. So I feel really sad. So I don't want that to ever be for my kids. I want them to pause. Don't ever say anything. Understand, like, if somebody's being an asshole, it's because they just don't have all the information you have. Nobody ever grew up saying they want to be an asshole. So something's going on here, and be mindful of it. So just move away from it.
That's so important.
You don't have to act on it.
That's so important with kids. And you just made me think about this morning and feel bad because I have the two kids every morning and night, and they're crazy. Like when they get school and two boys, and you see them on social media. And my younger son, Remy, was just like, they like to drink coffee in the morning. We all drink our little coffee. I give a little
bit. You got them hooked on the bean? You got them on the bean?
Listen, I drank coffee my entire pregnancy and nursing. So I think that's why. And I just give them a little bit. We all have our coffee together. And Remy was like upset about something, stupid stuff. Every minute he's having these breakdowns. downs. And I was just like, and I'm reflecting now how I should have paused because, you know, we're not perfect. And I was like, just stop crying. Like, I don't, because in my head, I'm like, you're crying over something stupid. But a 5-year-old, it's not stupid to them. Do you know what I mean? To them, it's important that his coffee was only filled a little bit, you know, and not as much as his brother's. And I'm like, and I'm thinking in that moment, like, I wish I could go back. As you're talking, I'm like, I wish I could go back to that to the moment this morning and not have said, oh my God, stop crying. Just drink it, you know? And he was, and appreciate that. So thank you for when it happens 10 more times this week, I will say, you know, stop and just pause and walk away for kids. Now, when you were on my episode 2 years ago and we talked about your nonprofit and the amazing things you're doing, and you've been working and building this for what, 13 years now, how do you detach from that, right? How do you detach from what you really want to create with this nonprofit and what's going to happen with this nonprofit? Is it just like turning the moments over in a constant detachment? Is there a practice? Have you even learned it yet with detaching from work, the company?
Well, it's what you want to detach from and what you don't want to detach from, right? I think I want to be clear on that. Like, detachment is not about, it's like getting caught up. Like, look, I'm not in the Buddha. It's like, hey, like, happiness and sadness, you got to get rid of both. I'm like, no, I'm not you, I'm not the Buddhist, I'll be happy, I'm gonna take that one. I really want to minimize sadness, but be in there, be in that, let it play a role, but don't live in sadness, right? Or don't live in anger, because I think they're important. I think it's important you feel it all.
Yes,
there's a spot where like, hey, my cup is full, now I'm moving on. So for me, the nonprofit is the process, and where I get to in my nonprofit is it's my passion. I love it. And when I'm trying to help myself with, I realize other people need help with the same things. So kind of like, I feel like it's a betterment spot, but my detachment is, at what point does it become, there's two kids and a wife sitting over here who really could care less about this thing.
Yeah.
I could be like, oh, but it's making me a better person. They just see I'm not spending time with them.
Yeah.
So my detachment comes from, you know, work 8 hours, sleep 8 hours, and make sure they're not the same 8 hours. You know what I mean? Like, separating
like
it out. So at night I have a schedule. I'm scheduled. I try to be like a little bit like, put some zones in there. Here's, I'm going to work. I'm going to do some creative stuff. Here's, I'm going to do this stuff. Like moving, like filling out stuff I hate to do, and I'm going to do it. And then here's a time when like, I need to be home and not telling my kids like what they need to be doing, but like, hey, how was your day? And being an active listener, or find out what they want to talk about. Like, and my sister told me something that was really interesting. Like, her daughter would start to throw these fits in the morning, and her husband would be like, stop doing that, stop. And then she would cry more. So she's like, okay, well, you're obviously upset. So why don't we set another 10 minutes? We're going to let you cry for 10 minutes. So why don't you come up here and you're going to cry? And they did it one day or two, and all of a sudden, like by the third day, the kid was like, "Oh, like I don't really need to be crying anymore." Like,
oh, I love that.
Yeah, she's ahead of the curve. I'm not that ahead of the curve. but sometimes people just need to get it out.
They do.
So anyway, my point is in the scheduling is, my non-attachment is being in the moment with somebody else and but intentionalizing, not just expecting. Like, oh, I love that person. Well, how do you love them? When you love them? Like, how's it happen? And loving around like how they want to be loved, not how you want to love them, right? So I try to now take on relationships like breathe in, breathe out. My son's this old. My son's 14. My daughter's 16. What are they interested in? What do they want to do? Like, don't hop in with something I think is important and tell them things. Like, hey, like what's going on? And find something they want to talk about and like be in the moment with them. With those things, I think that's what people want. So that's where I find I love my job. I want to love my job, but then I want to love my wife and I love my family as well.
And finding that balance between that, which is so important, I think, in a world today, whether, you know, everything is go, 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 and everything is more, 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 more. Or even, I wanted to touch back. You said something at the beginning of the episode, and I actually was reflecting on this. And you said about how someone dies, right? And people are, they're, the general sense, everyone's moved on two minutes later, right? Like, I mean, as far as not the person who's experiencing the death themselves in a personal way, but like the neighbor, you think, oh, the neighbor, you didn't have a neighbor who died next door, but let's say the neighbor died next door. And then all of a sudden you guys mourn and you think about it for like 2 or 3 days upset. And next thing you know, the whole world's moved on. And that's in a bigger thing, right? That's in, you know, people dying all over the world. That's in this, that's that. I think we've created, because of social media, such an instant, like, we don't even reflect on those moments of bad or good. And it's just like, people are gone. They moved on. They're 10, yeah. they're 10 lead. It's almost like we've, again, not the people who are personally experiencing the death themselves, but as a society, it's like, okay, well, when's the next death? What's the next thing? Where do we go now? And like, how do we, you know, because that's changing our brains to our yeah. own lives. And how do we yeah. learn to appreciate that? It's kind of like freaky in a way, you know, everyone's just like, all right, moved on yeah. now.
I think it's really freaky. And it's hard because I think there's a major processing in like the death. And like, I still, like I'm looking at a picture of my parents over here. My parents are both passed away. And I still feel some kind of way, but I think there's a way like intentionalizing those feelings. So going back to not feeling sad, you know, I was doing my performance routine. I like to listen to music every morning. And then all of a sudden my music was always like this.
Hold on, stop. What is a performance routine?
Like a performance routine is, something that helps me, like, so it comes from a tactical population. You think about like a performance routine is something I go through that helps me step into a moment and be better in the moment, right? And so I have a way I want to stack my day, because understanding like where I'm at is like, okay, if I do these things, I'm going to perform better. I'm going to be better. And it could be anything, you know, from yoga to exercise, to meditation, to music. And to me, it's a little bit all the above. I breathe, I stretch, I do some things, but I have music. And what I realized was the music started not working. I was like, huh, maybe it's a song, maybe it's something else. I realized it wasn't a song. Sometimes I need to be sad. Sometimes yes. I wake up and I'm like, where I'm at is like, and I want to be mine. And sometimes I need to make myself sad to feel. I'm not feeling things.
Yeah.
So where I'm at is—
put some country music on. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that makes me real sad. No, I love country music. But for a time and a place, there's something. So I would listen to this sparse piano music and make me sad. But what I want to do is compartmentalize the sadness. Hmm. So understand that life is sad. Like, maybe I'm like, dang. And I'm going to think about is my kids are going to die. My wife is going to die. I'm going to die. So maybe all these other problems are there to start to float away for a second. So yeah. I start with the bigger picture instead of the smaller things. It helps me with the rest of it. And in understanding that no matter where I finish the day before, or even an hour before, I have to constantly recreate the spirit. I have to constantly recreate what's going on and like the space for the spirit to come in. It's not about belonging or believing. It's about, I want that to transform me and those around me. So it takes a second, you know, you got to rev that back up with no matter who I'm talking to. Dealing with.
And I think too that the sadness and why people get so overwhelmed is because they're not honoring those tiny in comparison moments of sadness, right? Like, just like you said, like, so people fight it. They don't want to feel sad at all. So what happens is these layers of sadness of life things that we keep putting, they pile on. So when you're finally, you know, something happens and then you cry a little bit, you're like, no, I can't. It feels so overwhelming because you have years and lifetimes and energy of just stuck crying energy that you never released, you know? And country right. music, really, I listen to that. I listen to sad country songs when I want to cry. If
that
I go,
yeah.
you know, like for when I think about my dad or I want to cry, I feel like, yeah, I need to cry about him, mourning him, even though it's been 11 years. Sometimes it comes just like you with your parents. I need to feel it. I always put on The House That Built Me from Miranda Lambert. If you guys ever want to yeah. cry and cry about your family in some way, put that song on, The House That Built Me, because you will, within seconds, you will be tearing up with that song. But it is, right. we have to like honor, we can't fear the sadness. You know, we're so addicted to being yeah. happy and being this and that, but it's, there has to be the other side that we have to free.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think it's like, if, I don't, you know, we can talk about God like later on,
yeah.
or maybe now. But
bring him in, like, now. I see Jesus behind you. Bring him in.
Yeah, bring him in. But if you're meant to cry, like, I always feel like Jesus didn't save us from being human. He saved us to be human. So yeah. if like somehow I'm equipped to cry, like it must be a purpose in it. I wouldn't, there's something that's going on. It's not like your belly button where like, or I don't know, like something like that you no longer need. Like, oh, we used to have a tail. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something. Or your appendix. Suppose you don't need your appendix, right? Anymore yeah. and wherever it doesn't play, so it can be taken out. But my point is, it's a way for processing emotion that I think is very important. One of my favorite guys, like a motivational speaker, former basketball coach named Jim Valvano. And a lot of people know him because he started the Jimmy V Foundation. He died of cancer like a decade ago or so. But he was a really motivational guy. And he said his big three things to do every day is laugh a little bit, cry a little bit, and think a little bit. He's like, that's a good day if you could do all
Wow.
three of those things. I'm like, wow, man. And the other thing is, and he added on there, is like, believe in someone. I was like, oh, there you go. So when I think about all these things, and my office is surrounded by, there's Radio Raheem, there's
All your
all, I
spirit
mean,
guides, all like you got like the
all
positive.
around here.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Abe Lincoln.
There's Abe Lincoln, there's Thanos and Captain America. Really interesting stuff. But my point is, it's this, I gotta understand like what's going on around me, and believing, like ultimately the ultimate focus, I think we're made to connect with other people. That's how our brains are designed. And that's why I think when I come back to Jesus, his mandate was love God and love each other, man. I'm like, there you go.
Love, yeah.
But I have to have part of myself in there.
Yeah.
So Jesus was forgiving, his forgiving us is maybe about our forgiving ourselves to an extent, right? Like we're human, we're gonna make mistakes and accepting those mistakes and moving forward. So I talk about love as this inward, outward, upward kind of construct and making sure I'm making space for all three of those. And that's how I balance all of it out. Understanding that there's a general universal love and like I should just love myself. Find that, put it in here. And then my ultimate goal is to push it to people around me, push it to you, push it to my family, push it to the person in Walmart. And God knows that person in Walmart might need it the most,
And
you know?
when he said, and I think too for you mean that in the most non-judging, open way. And I want let's talk about Jesus real quick, and let's talk about religion, because you and I have had many talks about this. You know, we're both very spiritual, full of faith people. And where did society make Jesus go wrong, right? Like just like you said, I push out love, but from you, I can tell you when he means that, he doesn't give a shit what you're doing. He doesn't care if you're gay. He doesn't care if you're this. He doesn't care if you maybe robbed someone that morning, whatever it is. You mean it from a love, like Jesus will still love you. And where did we, and I think that's why people have gotten pushed away from religion, pushed away from love, because people used it as control, you know, like I can control you. And like, how do you think we did Jesus wrong as a society?
Well, first of all, people like, I like when somebody says, we know if Jesus came back today, no one would, we wouldn't be nice to him or we wouldn't love him. Like, nobody loved him back then either. First, I want to be clear, right? It wasn't like the guy was like, he had a small movement and there was lots of people, right? Because he had a very radicalized way of seeing things. And he's like, he was against whatever boot was on your neck,
Yeah.
political, financial, like these things mesh together. Like, he sees like the enemy of the state and the enemy, like, there's a couple things that converge. There's religion. There's democracy and there's capitalism. They have a woeful mesh point because what are we going to have that's most important? There's a great writer, philosopher, thinker, historian, Joseph Campbell, who says you want to look at what's most important in society, see what their biggest buildings are, look at what their biggest buildings are and what they're an ode to. Ours are about financial buildings, right? Way bigger than the church. So it's about the almighty dollar. And I think when you start following the money, it allows people to do whack out things. So that's at play. The other thing that's at play is we only value what we hold in our hand. I'm not against science. Like science, no. But what we've done with science is we only value what we can hold. And so now they've hacked your body. It's not God that makes you like this. It's your cells. It's this and. What you and I saw some guys, his name is Steve Cotterman. He has a book called Mapping Superman. I don't mind calling people out by name. This guy's a real jerk because what he does instantly in trying to tell you how great like you are, he's like, do you believe in the sky god? So instantly by calling it the sky god, he
Wow.
wants to minimize that thing and you for believing it. Like you're weird. But I kind of feel like this science only knows a part of who we are, and there's this greater thing that they don't know.
Yes.
And so always, and you always see in science, like, oh my God, we're like the thing they thought now was totally what different than what they thought 30 years ago, and onward, onward. So anyway, I think we only value that what we can hold in our hands, and the spirit isn't that thing, right?
Yeah.
That you can't see it; it's just all around you. So, but I can feel it for sure,
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting, somebody's like, well, do you really think Jesus rose from the dead? That's the question that ultimately comes down to, well, I believe in Jesus. I just don't believe he rose from the dead, right? And
Yeah.
I'm like, and then they're like, what do you think? And then the room goes silent and everybody looks at you. What do you think?
What do you
Right? Here
think?
it
You don't think
hangs in
he
the
rose from the
balance.
dead?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
But
yeah.
here's what I think. Here's why. Is the tomb, was there a body, was there not a body? Like, look, I don't like, I think there probably wasn't a body, and I think he rose, but I
Yeah.
think let me pause. He rose from the dead. Like, what the, if you go down to my, I go to a church in Alabama via Zoom. You want to see if Jesus, the spirit of Jesus, is transformative in people's day-to-day lives? That's the question. The
Yeah.
power that it brings, you see it all over. Maybe you
Yeah.
don't care to pay
Open it. Yeah.
attention to it, but I see people who make it real, who make real fundamental change. The civil rights movement was going nowhere until it got rooted in the church in the South and Martin Luther King, and look what the spirit of Jesus did for the civil rights movement. But we don't want to pay
Yeah.
attention that way,
Right. Yeah.
right? We
Yeah.
don't want, hey, I'm going to tell you, 38,000 first responders got healthy through our program because of this power, the power of the transformative power that the spirit of Jesus and God come into my life. So it's real. It's real, but we don't hold it and we devalue it,
Yeah.
right? We only believe in what we hold in our hands. But I see it in transactions and how people treat each other. I see it in a way when I hold on to that spirit and I go into, ultimately, when I go into Walmart and somebody's being this way, I'm like, I pause, I really welcome that spirit in, and I watch it change. It allows me to cross boundaries in myself that I wouldn't cross otherwise, that I wouldn't
Wow.
cross otherwise. So it becomes transformative, and there, ergo, it's real. For me, it's just as real as anything else I can see.
Yeah, no, it is a thousand. Like you said, if you look around, you can see the spirit, you can see the faith in everything if you choose to see it. And I was thinking, because I think in the next 20 years, 30 years, we're really going to discover that. I was talking with a client the other day, and her husband's a doctor, and all of her kids are doctors, and they're very, and it surprised me though, she was telling me her youngest son, because then we started talking about this and spirituality and afterlife and how spirits or God or anything source talks to us and sees us. And she said that, and how we can communicate people in other realms, whatever. She said that her son, who's a psychiatrist, is now working and starting to study this like gray matter, what you just talked about, that actually humans, we're all in this one frequency. And we all think, you and I know we're beyond that frequency, but a lot of people think there's nothing beyond this frequency of normal human communication. There can't be
Right.
anything. And how now they, quote unquote, science and doctors, are now studying this weird little gray area of like communicating with others, with spirits, with God, with what other realms, whatever it is. But now they are starting to understand. And we have some breakout doctors throughout the last 30 years who've been like, yo, I've been telling you this and showing you this. But now they're starting to like, oh, wait, yeah, there is another element to what we can't speak, you know, or necessarily see with the naked eye, but there is something else there.
Yeah, and that's, it is something else there. And the problem is the implements we use to grab God or understand God are what we see and know, but I think that's beyond us. God is called the ineffable, like it's indescribable. It's his power. So there's a theologian, Paul Tillich, says there's the God above the God. We do all these things to say God, but we don't even know what that is, and there's something above all that. So what I step to, and what I become most comfortable with, and God, and this is the hardest part, is I don't know. It's not a state of being, it's a state of feeling. So I just get into a state of feeling, and when I open that door, man, I can feel the spirit coming in, right? And what that spirit allows me to do is love myself and love you. And if you want to tell me I'm wrong, okay, I'm willing to be wrong. But between now and the time I die, I'm going to have a better relationship with myself and with you, then so be it. I'm glad. I'm okay with being wrong, you know? And I just feel like we just got to understand. We just don't know. We don't have the mechanisms. And so it's like moving beyond that, trying to grab it that way.
Trying to grab it that way. Now, are your kids, how are they with perceiving this?
I want to be gentle with them with this thing because it's a lot. And I don't want it to ever feel, I want them to kind of like be the guy, lead the guy who leads by example. Like, hey, what's going on with dad, man? He's all happy, he's being nice to me. And when they say, hey, like, what's going on, I'm like, that's Jesus, it's the power of Jesus. And I want to tell them that, like, oh, okay, like, because it's a big thing, and I want them to come along with it and understand it that way. So it's funny, I think, now hopefully we can get back to going somewhere, like having a spot where you intentionalize that feeling every day. That's what church is all about, or synagogue, or going to a mosque or an ashram or whatever, is intentionalizing it. We got to intentionalize in one spot, really be focused on it. But the real key for us is then having it follow us all around in all of our other relationships. And that's going to help me with my non-attachment. That's going to help me say, oh, this person is suffering, you know? And somebody's like, yeah, but you don't have to love everybody. I'm like, shoot, but here's the rub, you do.
Yeah.
That's the thing, you do. Sit with that for a second, right? And when you turn around to Donald Trump, you want to hate all the Trumpers and all the people, like, you do. And I'm like, I have people like, I hope he dies. I'm like, I don't. And they're like, what? You
Yeah.
know, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't hate him. I just don't. Like, the guy's just down some wrong path, man. But it's not even so anyway, reeling back from there, it's understanding, aspiring to that. And what I want to get for my kids is they should aspire to that too. And I think they're pretty good. You know, I think they're doing good, but we have to find a way to intentionalize that. So I'm just slowly bringing them in, and I don't want to be like, I hate the word indoctrinate,
Yeah.
you know. I like the word conversion. Conversion aspires to you're going deeper. Radical means you're going to the roots of. So something like that. Like, I just want them to go a little, keep going a little deeper and a little deeper. If you draw people in by inches, like, sometimes they'll turn around and they're like, shoot, a mile from where I started, but don't take them a mile in one hop, you know?
Yeah, no, don't take it in one hop. And I think if you could stop and then no matter what someone's saying to you, doing to you in the moment, and you could say this person's suffering and let me send them love, I think you might be one of the most powerful people in the world. Imagine that power that you might see. It might seem weak if you're like, I'm not going to do that, but it takes a lot to sit there if someone is, you know, has hurt you, is doing this, is suffering, is just being a plain asshole, to sit there, take a moment and let go of that feeling for you and pray for them or love them and say, I'm gonna love them in spite of their suffering, or be able to look into their shoes. I mean, that takes a lot of, as we've talked about, reflective work to be able to do that and understand that and look into yourself. And I think too, you have to be able to see yourself in those ugly ways, the ways you're an asshole, the way you're mean, the way you cheat, you lie, you steal, you know, not, you know, using those words loosely, but like looking at that, and then you can find love and forgiveness in all the other people, I think, because you can understand and say, oh yeah, well, I was an asshole too at one point, or I was really fucked up with my emotions one time too. Or, you know, I think that you can really do that. I think that's good. And I think, again, through raising children, just through watching you and knowing your kids and mine is that they're gonna learn by watching us. Kids learn
They're
not
going,
by we can
yeah.
tell them, but by watching how we handle and do things.
No, and if you got my family, my mom would go to DEF CON 4 consistently. My
She
mom
would.
had a crazy anger issue, but she had an awful upbringing,
Yeah.
right? Her father died when she was young. She was raised by older sisters who were resentful, and it was a really
Yeah.
bad thing. And then, you know, my parents got married because my dad got my mom pregnant. They didn't get married
Wow.
out of love. So there was a lot of working on their relationship there that I didn't know about. You know, you don't realize your parents are all screwed up, and a friend, but it's normal things. And my dad, same thing. My dad's dad died when he was younger, was raised by a very tough mom, and was a struggle to like make. I'm looking at the sheriff's sale from our house. So I always think when he was 28 years old, he came home, he was locked out of his house. He had an ex-wife, a daughter, one, so two girls, and my mom was pregnant with another one. And can you even imagine the stress and strain of
Oh,
like,
God.
and his mom was only about taking up with your responsibility. So he would get real, he just focused everything down into I need to succeed. And then all his emotions, he just pushed them down. But I had the magic key to it. So, you know, that resulted in some very unfortunate like outbursts from him to me. But now I'm, you know, so look, then I go back and like I'm upset at them because I got beat or called names
Yeah.
or whatever. And it's like you got to get to a spot where they take the best and leave the rest. But you know, I'm just saying, yeah, it's hard. It's the whole cycle of everything. It's really hard to get to those spots and to understand like what influenced you, those malevolent forces. And understand, I don't want to put those malevolent forces on my kids. And so the biggest thing I do for my kids is I'm going to miss it. And I'm going to miss it with you. I'm going to miss it with everybody because I'm not perfect, but I apologize. There's
Yeah.
integrity. So I come back at the end of my day. I'm like, when I calm down and I'm like, well, let the list of apologies start. Okay. Start with you, start with you, start with you. But you know what happens when you apologize, somebody's like, hey man, you know what happened today? Like I was really wrong. Not because, because I hurt somebody, right? Not because like the right or wrong thing is a weird thing. It's like I don't want to ever hurt somebody, not we got to be put ourselves in their shoes. So I go to my son, I'm like, hey man, I'm really sorry I said that to you or barked like that. And he's like, it's okay. Or I go to my other child, Galena, who's non-binary, so it's a them, just to be clear. So I go to them and say, hey, I missed it. They're like, it's okay, Dad. And I really feel that strengthens relationships and allows the space for them to understand they can apologize, which is huge, which is huge, I think, for all the relationships they're going to have going forward.
All the relationships, and we'll end on this note because, of course, this has been a fucking slam shot episode of 50 minutes in, like usual, life episode. We'll do that, but there's a power in apologizing. It can be hard at first, you know. It was drilled back years ago in my 12-step fellowship, is to. But I find their freedom. I find it extremely freeing to say you're sorry after time when you can get beyond, transcend beyond your ego that doesn't want you to say sorry. I find it ultimate freedom. I find it very freeing and almost detached when I can apologize almost, and I detach from that feeling. I detach from that side of myself that I need to apologize from by apologizing, you know, like, okay, I'm detaching myself from the self, this action, this, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing. Whew. This has been a good. Did you want to say something else on that? Did you want to touch on it?
No, but the last turn on that whole thing is, not only do I want to apologize, it's freeing for me. That's one half. The other half is, life becomes a lot easier when you learn to accept the apology you never got.
Oh God, yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
So when somebody's not apologizing, freeing myself of waiting for it,
Yes.
right? Like, I'm gonna apologize, and maybe that's called forgiveness, right? And I'm just gonna keep going because I don't. That comes back to the non-attachment, and that's what keeps us moving forward. Is like, gotta keep that big wheel rolling, you know?
Wow. Keep that wheel rolling.
That's it.
Rolling. I love that song. So now I haven't done this, I think, in a long time, but I did it with your episode. What piece of advice do you want to leave for our listening audience? I mean, we just gave them a shit ton, but what else, what stands out? What do you feel like, you know what, this is my last word?
My last word, I guess, would say it's not what you look at, it's what you see. You know, and always trying to see if somebody's human and people are suffering. And I think if you could walk around seeing that and see and not see a white person, a black person, a this person, an angry person, Republican or Democrat, but just see somebody's human and needs your love. I think that's a really big piece of advice, and it'll turn a lot of things around for you.
Yeah, move past those titles, move past those, you know,
Yeah.
get to the nature of the soul. And the way that you're going to get to the nature of someone else's soul is by getting to the nature of your soul.
That's a
Right?
great one. There you go.
I should write that down
I
so I
like
can
that.
remember
You should
that.
write it down right now.
I'm going to write it down after we end this episode. I am going to remind me when we end this. So, wow, 100 episodes, 2.5 years later. I'm so grateful that you were still in my
Me
life.
too. Me too.
We have a friendship. We've watched each other grow, go ups and downs through life and people, relationships on my end. You know what I mean? Go through that. And I'm really grateful. And I'm really grateful to have you again 100 episodes later. I still can't get over
Right.
that.
Yeah, that's great, Kyle. I'm really grateful you have it. But this same is real. I'm grateful for your friendship and the very reflective way and casual way, like easy way you seem to conduct yourself. And it makes people, you put people at ease around you because you're a very easy person. And I think that's a big quality that I would love to have in my, for me, is the way you do that so effortlessly and make everyone feel very loved. I think
Well,
that's really important.
thank you. That means a lot. And I'll say one quality I wish I had of yours, which I've talked about, is your not just determination, but your discipline. You know, you discipline yourself to stay in that state, right? You discipline yourself to do the right thing. You discipline yourself every morning to, like, hey, I'm gonna have a great day today, hopefully, but this is what I'm gonna do just to make sure I have this great day. You know, you discipline yourself with your family, your time. You're extremely disciplined and in the most beautiful, loving way too, not even a bad way. So I wish I had that. See, we ended with the compliments.
There you go.
Tell
I love it.
everyone, David, where they can find you at, your website, nonprofit, Facebook, whatever.
Sure. Well, you look, you can find me on our website is the first 20. It's all words, the thefirsttwenty.org. And then same thing on Facebook. Check me out, and then you'll link to our program from there. It's called The Road to Resilience. So you can sign up for our program for free.
And let me just say this real quick. Go back to listen to episode one to hear all about it. But it is basically, essentially, he teaches these life lessons, these spiritual principles to the first responders in the United States. So, you know, I just want to say that is what his nonprofit is. If you want to know more about it, go check out his website or episode one on this podcast with David Wurtzel. Thank you, David, for coming out. You have been awesome, amazing. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for everyone who has supported me since, you know, the last 100 episodes from the beginning, the ups and downs, the changes. Yay!
Yay! Yay! Good job. Way to go.
Thank
That's
you.
Inspirational.
Thank you. Thank you. I love you all. Thank you again. Make sure you check me out on Facebook, Colleen Dixon, Instagram, The Hair Healer 1111, though that is probably changing, and TikTok, Cosmic Colleen. So thank you, everyone. Have a beautiful day. Bye.